Vishnupadam sahagana lalita shri vishakam vitamsha manchikampa jivyascha kripa sindhu yevacha pachitanam bhavan evyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
So it's January 29th, 2016, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Text 22, and I'm sorry, I'm still dealing with a bad cold, so my voice is a little... yes, weak and scratchy. So ham samasta jagatam surideka atma. Sadvena yam yudayate bhagavan bhagena
Sadvena yam yudayate bhagavan bhagena
Tenaiva medru samanu sprisatat yataham Shakshyami purva vadidam pranata priyosau. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Let the Supreme Lord be merciful towards me. He is the one friend and soul of all living entities in the world, and he maintains all for their ultimate happiness by his six transcendental opulences. May he be merciful towards me, so that I, as before, may be empowered with the introspection to create, for I am also one of the surrendered souls who are dear to the Lord. Purport. The Supreme Lord, Purushottama, or Sri Krishna, is a maintainer of all, in both the transcendental and material worlds. He is the life and friend of all, because there is eternally natural affection and love between the living entities and the Lord. He is the one friend and well-wisher for all, and he is one without a second. The Lord maintains all the living entities everywhere by his six transcendental opulences, for which he is known as Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma prayed for his mercy so that he might be able to create the universal affairs as he did before. Only by the Lord's causeless mercy could he create both the material and spiritual personalities like Marichi and Narada, respectively. Brahma prayed to the Lord because he is very much dear to the surrendered soul. The surrendered soul knows nothing but the Lord, and therefore the Lord is very affectionate toward him. So yam samasta jagatam surideka atma sadvena yan Mridayate Bhagavan Bhagena Tenaiva Medra Samanus Prisatad Yataham Shakshyami Purva Vadidam Pranata Priyosau. Let the Supreme Lord be merciful towards me. He is the one friend and soul of all living entities in the world, and he maintains all for their ultimate happiness by his six transcendental opulences. May he be merciful towards me, so that I, as before, may be empowered with the introspection to create, for I am also one of the surrendered souls who are dear to the Lord. So I'm still getting over this cold or flu, and so my voice is a little scratchy, and I apologize. I don't have so much volume, and it sounds a little funny. So it's interesting that Brahma here is saying, Surid Eka, you are the only friend. You are my only friend. And he's asking for a benediction from the Lord out of friendship. He's saying, I'm doing your business because I love you, and please help me to do your business because you love me. He's really just asking for an exchange of love and affection. He's not asking for something fruitive here. It's not a business exchange he's asking for. It's a loving exchange. know, it's I'm doing something for you out of love, and I need your help. You know, I'm buying you a present out of love, and I need to know what you want. I need to know what you would like. You know, like they have for years, they've had things like bridal registries where when a couple's going to get married, they go to a store and they list at the store what they would like as a married couple, and then people can go to that store and buy something they know that the couple would be happy with. It also prevents the couple from getting, you know, 10 copies of the same thing. So it's like that. I'm giving you something you would like, and I need help from you in order to give you what you would like. So this exchange of love, and he's the only friend. That's what we're all looking for. This purport is so moving here. And Prabhupada writes, he is the life and friend of all, because there is eternally, naturally affection and love between the living entities and the Lord. Krishna tells Arjuna, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future will any of us cease to be. We are eternally persons. And what does that mean, that we are eternally persons? What does it mean to be a person? A person means that you have personality. It doesn't just mean that you are distinct in space. You can have many identical chairs created in a factory that are distinct in place, in space, geographically. But that doesn't make them individual persons at all. And in fact, spiritually, there is no such thing as space as we materially conceive it. So personality means attributes. It means likes and dislikes. It means having our own opinion. That's what it means. Just like right now in America, there are presidential elections, and we have two main parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and they have different opinions about how to best serve the country. And even within the party, there's different candidates within the Democratic Party vying for the Democratic nomination, and those different candidates even within the party have different opinions. And yet they're all, at least theoretically, practically probably that's not the case, but at least theoretically, they're all working for the good of the country. Their interest is one. And in the same way, we as persons have our individuality in wanting to please Krishna. We have our own opinion as to how to please Krishna. Some persons want to please Krishna in service. Some want to please Krishna in conjugal love. And some want to please Krishna by being very outgoing and funny, and some by being very shy. And there's an unlimited number of personalities, and we have this personality in relationship to Krishna eternally. It's not created at a certain point. It is eternally, means without beginning. And it has to be in relationship to Krishna. Some people say that it's become popular nowadays for some people to say that we do not have an inherent relationship with Krishna. But anything Krishna says that it is without relation to him is the definition of Maya. He says anything that appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So our personality, any concept of personality without relation to Krishna, is an illusion. So we have an eternal personality in relationship to Krishna. You know, materially, it's I like pistachio ice cream and you hate pistachio ice cream. You know, I like climbing mountains and you like scuba diving, right? So our personalities in this world are in relationship to what I like for my sense gratification and what you like for your sense gratification, what modes of nature are covering us, what samskaras and life experiences we've had. But our eternal personality is in relationship to how we want to please Krishna and how he wants to please us. And therefore, there is this eternal natural affection and love. Natural affection and love means how I want to please you and how you want to please me. In this conditioned state, it's all about how I want to please myself, and I'm using you to please myself. You're using me to please yourself. There's no real affection and love. Now, there's something that looks like that sometimes. But what there is eternally, without beginning, is this natural affection and love, and it becomes covered by, instead of our having this affection and love for the Supreme Self, we have it for ourselves, which is a part of the Supreme. So the real natural healthy state is to again revive this relationship. And this is what we want. If we analyze, what do we really want, all of us? What do we really want? You know, we can say, I really want lots of money, and I really want, you know, I've been sick now for about 10 days. So, you know, I really want good health, you know. Or somebody really wants status in society, or they want a beautiful home or a nice family. But what do we really want? We really want an exchange of love. And we really want to have that one person, Surit Eka, that we know that there is this person who loves us unconditionally without wanting anything in return, who likes to be around us, who thinks we are wonderful, and who will be there for us, who give us whatever they can give us. Your Brahma is saying, you know, give me the facility to serve you so I can give to you. And someone we can give our heart to unreservedly. You know, and materially, we're disappointed again and again and again. That we give our heart to somebody in whatever relationship. We give our heart to our country. We give our heart to our employer. We give our heart to our religious society. We give our heart to our parents, our children, our siblings, you know, our friends. And they don't even notice that we're giving our heart. They're not grateful. They don't reciprocate. They're not satisfied. And nor are we satisfied with how they're giving themselves to us. We say, why don't you treat me the way that I want? And they say, well, I'm trying. And we say, well, I don't think you're trying very hard. So we're very dissatisfied. But this is what we're looking for. And when we have this, we don't really care about anything else. When we find this in the Lord, as Dhruvamara says, now I'm full, I don't want anything else. And he was lamenting, why did I ever want anything else? So every bona fide system of religion is teaching, go for this. Go for this. And one who finds this, they become naturally renounced and austere. It's not exactly that becoming renounced and austere is the process. Of course, we have to do some austerities as part of the process. But the real process is to revive this friendship relationship with the Lord. So what does it mean? So we're going to look briefly about what does it mean to be the Lord's friend and the Lord being our friend. And, of course, Prabhupada talks about this generally in relationship not to this Bhagavatam verse, but in relationship to 525, Bhoktaram Yagatapasam Sarvalok Maheshram Surinam Sarvabhutanam Yatvimam Shanti Michiti. And Prabhupada says, if we want peace, we should understand that here is the Supreme Friend. And of course, Krishna tells us that Bhaktosime Sakha Jeti, you can understand this because you're my friend. So then we will really understand what Krishna consciousness is. And this friendship with the Lord, this is not only for those living entities who are in Sakya Ras, but even those in Dasya Ras have some feeling of friendship for the Lord. And why just speak of those who are above Sakya Ras? I mean, above in one sense. In Vatsalya and Madhurya Ras, friendship is certainly included. So there's different varieties of friendship with the Lord, as explained by Rupa Goswami. And again, this is really for everybody. This friendship is one of the nine processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Pandam, Padasevanam, Dasare, Pujana, Sakitana, Atmanivedanam. So Sakitana, this is one of the nine processes of bhakti that's performed both by those in Vaidhi Bhakti and in Raghunuga Bhakti. Those in Vaidhi Bhakti, even if they're aiming for Vaikuntha, they're still cultivating some feeling of that the Lord is my supreme friend. So there's a general friendship called Vishvasa. And in Vishvasa, it means we have strong faith or confidence in the Lord as our benefactor. And we see this principle in today's verse, where Lord Brahma is convinced Sudat Ekam, you are my only benefactor, and you are going to give me the ability. You are going to give me the ability to create the universe. It's going to come from you. So does that mean that the only thing we do to get ability is sit and pray, you know, sit and chant? No. No, it's part of our duty as devotees to be daksha, to be expert in our service. That may mean we have to take some classes. We may have to study something. We may have to get a mentor. It doesn't mean you just go in the kitchen and chant Hare Krishna. Of course, it is a fact that if somebody is purely Krishna conscious, then Krishna reveals everything. Even the great mystic yogis, they can just look at something and understand it without having to have any sort of study. I mean, Krishna Balaram could do that at school, of course. But generally, the devotee, as part of their service, becomes expert in it, but still knowing that everything is coming from Krishna. So when we say this faith, do we mean Shraddha? So Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Shraddha and Vishvasa are synonyms, but they're different shades of meaning. So Vishvasa is the practice for bringing about Shraddha and is also the result of Shraddha. So that Krishna is my benefactor, that the Lord protects and provides is very much what Lord Brahma is asking. And I often like to talk about something that my god sister Narayani brought to my attention, that in Bhagavad Gita 2:45, Krishna says, "Nir yoga kshema atmavan," give up all anxieties for gain and safety and be established in the self. And well, what will happen to my gain and safety? And in Bhagavad Gita 9:22, yoga kshema vaham yaham, I'll take care of it, Krishna says. Just be attached to me and I'll take care of it. And I give the example many times, if you work for a good company, you just worry about the company's business and they'll take care of what you need. And of course, this may remind us, this is such a mentality is not only existent in our Vaishnava tradition, but in all the great religions of the world. We think of the Psalm 23 of King David, where he says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." So this is that mood. Krishna, you're taking care of me. Right? And as Srila Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Devotion in chapter 11, he says, "The devotee who has confidence in devotional service to the Lord follows the rules with that Krishna will give him to perfection." This is the confidence, utsaha. This confidence that Rupa Goswami talks about in the Upadeshamrita. Not just confidence with yogakshema vahamyaham. This is not just confidence that Krishna will feed me. This is confidence that if I serve him, he will deliver me to my eternal service. He will revive my... because that's what he wants. That's what he wants more than anything else. In fact, Prabhupada often says Krishna wants it more than we do. So this confidence that Krishna will not only take care of my body and my material needs. Of course, this body is going to die. It's not that Krishna is going to maintain this body eternally. Thankfully, I've never understood the demons who want to live eternally in a material body. But also that Krishna will provide everything we need for our spiritual life. Draupadi exhibits this dependence when the Kauravas are attempting to disrobe her. And she says, "O Govinda, remembering again and again your promise that your devotee will never perish, I maintain my life." Right? That she's gone through so many difficulties. So this faith that Krishna will take care of us is not a faith that nothing bad externally will happen to us. It's the faith that Krishna will see us through. He'll give us the strength. He'll give us the ability to see it through. In love. In love. Right? There's one devotee who posts regularly on the internet. His wife is, in her old age, has become incapacitated. Physically completely incapacitated and mentally to a large extent incapacitated, and how he goes to visit her in her medical facility every day, and whenever he's there with her, then she's calm and peaceful. So it's like that Krishna, whatever difficulties I go through in life, as long as I can be with you and as long as I can please you, then I am satisfied. I don't need anything else. Right? Draupadi says, in all kinds of tribulation, I simply remember your promise, and thus I live. Right? And Krishna takes care of us, just like he takes care of his calves and cowherd boyfriends. And the devotee has this mood of friendship, this again when Lord Brahma says, Surit Ekam, you're my only friend, and I'll take shelter of you no matter what. It doesn't matter. Right? If someone says, well, give up Krishna's lotus feet and rule the universe. No. I'll stay with Krishna. This is what it means to be a friend, isn't it? To be a friend means that you're my only shelter. Only you. And this is what Prabhupada says in the purport today. Right? The surrendered soul knows nothing but the Lord. I'm not going to take shelter in my knowledge, in my intelligence, in my creativity, in all of my social connections, my social power. And in sociology, we study about things like social capital. You know, people not only have wealth in terms of cash, but they have social power, social wealth. Who do you know? Do you know powerful people? And cultural capital, you know, what's your knowledge of your culture? Religious capital, you know, how many Sanskrit words do you know? How many religious behaviors, mantras do you know? No, only Krishna. No other shelter. And never to give up Krishna, no matter what is happening. So this visvasa of friendship, we could summarize as, the Lord is my benefactor and friend and my only shelter. From him I get maintenance and protection. I take solace in his promise of protection in all difficulties. And I won't give up his shelter for any material opulence. So this is one of the moods of friendship. So another division of friendship is Mitra, which is Rupa Goswami gives as a general friendship. And Srila Prabhupada explains in Nectar Devotion, Chapter 11. He says, the second type of devotional friendship is to become a well-wisher of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the first one, Vishvasa, is Krishna is my friend, and here really I am Krishna's friend. And Prabhupada says also in Nectar Devotion, anyone who's preaching the confidential message of the Gita to the people in general is so dear to Krishna that no one can be equal to him in human society. So this is what Lord Brahma is asking for. He's asking, I want to be your friend. Please allow me to do something for you. And what does he want to do? It's of note that Prabhupada mentions Marichi and Narada in the purport. This is echoing the commentary of Vishwamitra Chakravarti Thakur, who talks about Marichi and Narada. And Marichi as exemplifying those living entities who are materially inclined and who are going to develop the universe materially, and Narada as exemplifying those living beings who are spiritually inclined and who are going to develop the universe spiritually. So Lord Brahma wants to produce both kinds of living entities in order to fulfill the purpose of the Lord. And Lord Brahma, of course, is the head of our Sampradaya. He is preaching the message of the Lord. So in this sense, Lord Brahma wants to be empowered to be Krishna's friend. And we have such a nice example of what does it mean to be Krishna's friend. So in the Bhagavatam, the gopis, twice, I think it's in chapter 21 and in 35, they talk about Megaha Suridam. We have this word Surid again, that he says that the clouds are the friend of Krishna. So one reason they're considered Krishna's friend is they have the same color as Krishna. Krishna's color is compared to the clouds. Right now here in Hawaii, it's right before sunrise. The sun is going to rise in about 15-20 minutes. And the sky is this incredible shade of blue. It's a very dark blue, and it's it's effulgent. It's absolutely gorgeous. So this is some idea of Krishna's color. So why are the clouds and Krishna considered friends? Because of this, they're the same color. Well, we experience the same phenomena materially. So if somebody has a certain skin color, they will feel that other people of a similar skin color have some camaraderie with them. It's a natural thing that we feel an affinity for people who look like us. We have an affinity for people who speak like us. I've given this example many times, how I was traveling in China years ago, and very few Chinese people speak English, down to hello. I mean, they just don't speak a word of English generally. Except for my translator, in many places, most people didn't speak any English. And I was kind of cut off from communicating with people for most of the 10 days I was there, except through a translator. And when I was leaving, I was in the Shanghai airport, and as I was standing in line in the queue, I overheard some people speaking English. And not only English, but with an American accent, and not only an American accent, but a Northeastern American accent, which is where I was brought up. And immediately I felt some kinship with them. It sort of astonished me. Oh, here are some people who speak my language in my accent. And, you know, I had nothing to do with them. I had no relationship with them. But because of that, I felt some kinship with them. So someone who has the same color skin, someone who speaks the same language and the same accent, or, you know, someone who's a member of the same religion, and we feel, oh, there's something alike about us, and we feel some connection. So in this way, if we have something in common with Krishna, of course, to be Krishna's friend, we do want to have something in common with Krishna. We want to be, in a sense, of the same color. We want to have the same mood of Krishna. And what is the mood of both the cloud and Krishna? That both the cloud and Krishna benedict disturbed people. That when everything is dry, and here in Hilo we have the most number of rainy days of any city in the northern hemisphere, but the last few weeks has been kind of dry. We've had to water the plants. And the cloud is the friend, because the cloud brings water, which supplies us with food, with water to drink, water for washing our clothes, for bathing, etc. And similarly, Krishna is upbringing. And of course, we become the friend by assisting. Samsaradava nalidaloka tranayakarana ganaganatvam praptasikaryana ganaganatvam vande guru shi taranadavin. That the guru is like this cloud who's bringing the water from the ocean of Krishna and putting out the fire of conditional life. But it's Krishna's water. The guru is just transporting it. So we can be a friend to Krishna by helping him with his job. Not that he needs any help, you know? Not that he needs any help. But even the little child, the two-year-old child, when they're helping the parents, you know, here we have one of the grandchildren, here is two. And when it's time to eat, he likes to get out the plates and the spoons and serve them out. He likes to be helpful. So we don't really need the help of a two-year-old, but it's very charming. It warms the heart with affection. So although Krishna doesn't need our help, when we help him to relieve the conditioned souls, we become his friend, right? The samsara is like a forest fire. And the cloud and the devotees, they put out this forest fire. It's compared to this great burning sensation, right? The envy feels like a burning, and this desire to sexual lust feels like a burning, and greed for money feels like a burning, or anger feels like burning, and anger is all this, and it just consumes us. And we can be Krishna's friend by pouring this water of mercy, of Krishna consciousness. And that's what Lord Brahma wants to do with his creation. Lord Brahma doesn't just want to create the material world to facilitate people's material desire. That's part of it, because that's part of the Lord's mission. But also he wants to create persons like Narada, like the four Kumaras, who will relieve persons' anxiety. And in this chapter, this is the beginning of Lord Brahma's asking for a benediction. And he's before this, he's been glorifying the Lord. And he's talked about how his heart is aching in grief for the bewildered living entity. So he wants to do something about it, right? And this way we can be the friend of the Lord. Now, of course, the cloud is also the Lord's friend, in a very personal way. It's the Lord's friend, and it has the same color as the Lord, the same mood as the Lord. It's the Lord's friend, and that is helping the living entities to come to Krishna consciousness, which we could say is the greatest friendship. That is the greatest act of friendship, because that is Krishna's greatest desire. Krishna doesn't have any unmet needs in the sense that we understand it. But in another sense, we could say that Krishna really wants that the conditioned living entities come back to their position of happiness. One could say, from one perspective, that it's the only thing he doesn't have. I mean, it's very hard to talk about these things without getting into some material conception. So the greatest act of friendship we can do for the Lord is to preach. But the clouds are also Krishna's friend in another way. So in chapter 35 of Krishna book, which corresponds to chapter 35 of the 10th canto, Srila Prabhupada says that the clouds form an umbrella of flower-like pieces of snow. Somehow it's not translated like that in the BBT edition, but Prabhupada very clearly says on the audio tape, flower-like pieces of snow, to congratulate his friend, Prabhupada says, and protect him from the scorching sunshine. So this is the mood of the friend. The mood of the friend is to also do some personal service for Krishna. How can Krishna be affected by the sunshine? How funny, how silly. Krishna says, I am the heat of the sun. I am the light of the sun. The sun is my eye. And how Krishna is going to be disturbed by the sun? The sun is a small, tiny, tiny, tiny reflection of Krishna's own Brahma Jyoti. And yet, the cloud is feeling that Krishna is in some pain, like the gopis are feeling also that Krishna's feet are going to get harmed by the little thorns on the path. So in that way, we also become Krishna's friend. So this is our way of being Krishna's friend. Our way of being Krishna's friend, we're just going to summarize this Mitra friendship, is I am the well-wisher of the Lord. So like him, I want to help others. I want to relieve their distress. And I especially show my friendship by teaching others about Krishna, how to surrender to him. I was listening this morning, Prabhupada was speaking about them just coincidentally. The lecture I was listening to this morning, Prabhupada was speaking about. He said, how can we be a friend to anyone? How is that possible? He said, often in the name of friendship, we misguide our friends. And we can't really relieve them of their distress. But, he said, we can say, Krishna is your supreme friend. And in that sense, we become their friend. And in that sense, we act as Krishna's friend. And not only that, that I want to relieve the Lord of any inconvenience. I don't want the Krishna to have any difficulty on a very personal level. Of course, this can be exhibited through our service to the deity. We give the deity food, we give the deity clothing and water, we fan the deity. This can be exhibited in our worship of the holy name. That we chant the holy name in a situation as far as possible. At least our concentrated japa, someplace that's undisturbed. And we give the holy name free from all inconvenience and distraction. And of course, the advanced devotees may also serve the Lord in friendship with some degree of as an intimate friend, with some informality, as an equal. So these are the ways in which we can develop our friendship with the Lord, Vishvasa, to see the Lord as our benefactor and protector, which is what Lord Brahma is asking for here, and for service, and also that we will be the Lord's friend by assisting him in his mission in a general way and by assisting him personally and providing for his comfort and his happiness. And then we will feel fully satisfied. We will feel, I have everything that I could ever want. And we will not need to, and we won't have any inclination to ask the Lord for anything else. Of course, if we're not at that platform, we certainly should go to the Lord for our desires rather than going elsewhere. But the main thing that we should be asking the Lord for is this revival, this eternal natural affection and love between the living entities and the Lord. We have this. It's already there. It's not something to be gained from any other source. It's not something to be gained even from guru and sadhus and shastra and sadhana. They are not giving this to us. We already have it. They are awakening it within us. They are facilitating our awakening it, just like we as the Lord's friend should facilitate this awakening in others. So we engage in the process of bhakti, not really to get this. It's eternal. It's beginningless. And this is the whole purpose of our Krishna consciousness. This should be the goal of everything we do in our bhakti and everything we do in our life. How can I develop this? How can I awaken this? This sense that Krishna is my surit eka. He is my only friend. He's the one friend. He is maintaining me. He is maintaining everyone. He's even maintaining the demons and the atheists. He's even giving the criminals and the atheists facilities to hate him and break his laws. What you speak of what he's giving to the devotees. So questions, comments, and again, I'm sorry, my voice is kind of weak.
Sort of more, something that you said, and sort of, it went by quickly. I wish I could have sort of rewound and heard what you said, but something to the effect that I think you were alluding to when we sometimes say the one thing that Krishna doesn't have that we could offer to him is to help bring back those that have turned away from him. And then you said something like, well, it's not exactly like that, but it's something very difficult to understand. We wouldn't get into it now. Is that what you were talking about? And if so, would you...
Yeah, well, it's Krishna's...
Could I get you to talk about it? Because that's really...
Well, it really is the first verse of the Isha Upanishad. Om Purnam Adha Purnamidam Purnat Purnat Udachite Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vasishite. If you're infinite, then even if you lose infinity, you're still infinite. So Krishna's still infinite and unlimited, even though there's billions of living entities who are not reciprocating with him. It doesn't mean that he has a lack. You know, my resources are not infinite, materially speaking. Each of us has some amount of money, for example. So maybe some of us have $100, maybe some of us have $1 million, but it's finite. And if we lose some portion of that money, we've lost it. We have less. When Krishna loses something, he doesn't have less. And at the same time, he's lost something. Both are true simultaneously. So there are an unlimited number, uncountable, not unlimited really, uncountable number. It is a finite number of rebellious jivas. There's an infinite number of jivas, but there's a finite number of rebellious jivas. But it is uncountable to us. I mean, even the number of jivas in our city is uncountable to us. So there's some uncountable number of rebellious jivas who are not reciprocating with Krishna. And because each of us has a particular flavor of reciprocation with Krishna, each of us has a unique personality, one could say, well, Krishna's not experiencing that flavor of loving reciprocation right now. Someone's speaking. Ramananda, maybe you can hear me.
I muted them.
Okay. So this principle is nicely explained in the Shastras and by our Acharyas. that Lord Kapiladev says the Lord appears differently to each devotee. And each devotee has a certain flavor. Akila Rasamrita Murti, you know, we talk about 12 rasas, but then it can be expanded. You know, Rupa Goswami gives so many subcategories in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Ujjwala Nilamani of all the different ways of relating with the Lord, and ultimately each jiva has a particular way of relating with the Lord that no other jiva has. So, I mean, something like in this world, each child, like here my son and daughter-in-law have 10 children. So in one sense, the affection they feel for all their children is the same. In another sense, it's different. They have a different relationship with each of their children. And each child has a little different relationship with the parents. Each child sees the parent a little different way. If one of the children were to die, it's not that the parents would just say, well, we have so many other children. They would miss the particular flavor of the relationship of that child. Nobody else could replace them. You know, this is one of the complaints of people who had a child die, that someone will say, oh, you can always have another child. It's like, well, you can't replace that individual. You have a friend that dies, if someone says, well, you have so many other friends, but that person can't be replaced by some other friend. They're a unique individual. So our uniqueness means that we have a particular kind of love for Krishna that no one else has. That's what it means to be a person. So one could say Krishna's not getting that. Krishna's not getting the particular kind of love and affection and service that I give him. So therefore, you could say that he's in lack. But he's not in lack. A simple example would be when Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and the calves, and Krishna manifested as those entities. So Krishna is capable of giving to himself. And one of the reasons he manifested as those entities was so Balaram, who's also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, would not feel any separation from his friends. So Lord Balaram, for that year, until the last few days, he was experiencing the same relationship, the same taste or flavor from the individual cowherd boys and calves that he normally got from the jivas. As did the parents. Of course, it was enhanced. It was actually deeper because it was Krishna, not those jivas. But the point is that Krishna can satisfy himself by himself. He doesn't need me. Krishna can taste whatever flavor of love I'm supposed to be giving him, whether I give it to him or not. He's not dependent on me to give him that. So in that sense, there's no lack. I mean, just we're explaining materially, I don't think we can really understand it, but from a material perspective. At the same time, simultaneously, he's feeling a lack. Not a kind of emptiness, because he's always full and overflowing. What's lust and love? Lust is, I'm empty and I need to take from you. Lust is, I'm overflowing and I'm giving to you. That's love. So Krishna's not feeling a lack as far as lust. He's not feeling, oh, that jiva, who's right now named Urmila, is not serving me in her constitutional position, therefore there's something missing. There's an emptiness that I can't fill. No, that's not how he's feeling at all. He's feeling, I have this overflowing love that I want to give to this jiva, and that jiva is not accepting it. That jiva is blocking the natural love I want to give. I wish that I could give this love to that jiva. And that's not exactly a lack. and the Lord's own happiness is not affected by that. Maybe we can think of it in this way. You know, we go out on Sankirtan distributing books, distributing prasadam. And let's say that you had, you know, a large quantity of books. It's so many books that you had more than you could give out that day, even if every single person that you met took a book. Let's just say, for example. But not every person you meet is going to take a book. You want to give a book to everyone. That's your desire. Now, if somebody doesn't take a book, you don't feel a personal lack. You feel some compassion. You feel some compassion for that person. Oh, that person is losing out on this opportunity. But you don't feel a personal lack. However, if everybody would take a book, then your happiness would even increase. So something like that. Some concept like that. I think that's the best that I can do. Because we're trying to explain something that is so out of the range of our conditioned experience. Our conditioned experience is that of this illusion of lack and emptiness and need. So these things don't really make sense to us on an intellectual level very well. I hope I've at least done a little justice to it.
No, that's helpful. I was just worried because I often say that, you know, the only thing that we can really offer Krishna that he doesn't have is to assist him in bringing back the conditioned souls that have turned away from him. And in fact, he says in the Gita, there's no one more dear.
Yes.
Nor will there ever be.
Yes.
Anyone who's assisting in that.
And that's true. That's a true statement. It's a truth that what you're saying is a true statement. And it's also a true statement that Krishna has everything.
No, that was helpful. That completes the understanding of it. That was nice.
You know, and we want to look at it both ways, because if we only say that Krishna doesn't have, then we're going to go into the mood of thinking that Krishna is an exploiter and that he's asking for our service so he can use us to give him something that he doesn't have. That we're fulfilling some need of his and, you know, some emptiness of his. Of course, the residents of Vrindavan may sometimes have that, you know, have that mood out of such intense love that they forget that Krishna is infinite. But that's a different platform, where Mother Yasoda really believes that Krishna has to eat. You know, that's a little different. Anybody else?
That was nice. Thank you very much.
Sure, thank you.
Mother Urmila,
bringing it up. Yes.
Thank you very much for your class. Beautiful words. Just wanted to mention a little story about what you were just talking about and throughout the class. And this is a personal story. It happened about 22 or 23 years ago when I used to live in New Vrindavan. And it was late at night, about 10 o'clock at night. And I had finished making my candles and I was on my way home. And if you have been to New Vrindavan, if you go from Bahulavan to the main temple, which is where I was supposed to go, it's a very curvy road and it's very bumpy. And it was late at night. So it so happened that when I was going up the hill, I had bought a van from the temple that was a very old van and dilapidated kind of. And so while I was driving up the hill in the middle of the night, the lights went out because I guess there was a short circuit. And they went out for a few seconds, and I was driving at like 35 miles an hour. And my immediate reaction was, oh, Krishna, come on. Do you have to do this right now? I have to go to Mongol Arctic tomorrow, and I got to go to sleep. Why do you do this to me right now? And then the lights came on, And then they went off again. And that happened like about 3 times. And I drove in the dark, probably about 3 to 5 seconds or 6 seconds at a time. So I didn't think much of it. I parked the van, I went to sleep, went to Mongol Arctic next day. But last week, I just thought about that incident. And I woke up with this image of me driving in the dark in New Vrindavan, in this curvy road. And I thought, oh my God, who was driving that van? I couldn't have driven that van. It was totally dark. And I thought immediately, well, that was Krishna. Krishna was driving the van. And I thought, well, Krishna likes me and Krishna loves me. And I told Mother Brihan, I said, Brihan, you know, Krishna loves me, Krishna likes me. And Brihan said, Krishna loves everyone. I said, well, yeah, Krishna loves everyone, but he likes me. Krishna doesn't really like or doesn't love every demon out there. He just loves some or maybe likes some. In this case, he likes me and he loves me. So I left it at that. So the question is, does Krishna actually loves all the demons also, or he doesn't care about some of the demons? What's the situation with that?
Krishna loves every jiva equally. Every single jiva equally. And Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridesha Janachastai Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yantra Rudrani Maya. Yantra is machine. So not only was Krishna driving your car at New Vrindavan, what a wonderful story, but Krishna's driving our bodily machine. Without Krishna, there's no question that we could walk or talk or see or eat. And he's doing that for everyone, even those who hate him. I mean, even what Jesus said, he said, if you love someone who loves you, that is not a very great thing. Even the criminals, you know, even in the mafia, they love people who love them. Even the Nazi war criminals who were torturing people, they were kind to their children and their dog. Even vicious animals are kind to their own cubs. So to love someone who loves you, that's not a very great credit. To love those who hate you. So Krishna loves everyone equally. It is out of respect and love for the demons that he hides himself from them because they don't want to see him. And he doesn't force. That is love. Whenever we try to force anybody, when we try to force people to see our point of view, force people to, even in the name of their own good, I mean, sometimes you're dealing with a young child, there has to be some force, obviously. The government dealing with criminals, there has to be some force. Some force is required. But in general, if we're trying to force people to do things or understand things, even if ostensibly it's for their own good, that's not love, generally. So Krishna doesn't force those who hate him to love him. He doesn't even force them to be aware of him. They say, I don't want to know you exist. He says, all right. I will give you forgetfulness of me. I will cover you your intelligence. Of course, that's also love. The intensity of Krishna's love for all jivas is the same. The flavor is different on the ultimate. Platform. Boy, we're really having trouble with the internet. I think we should stop now.
Can I add something?
Just briefly, because the internet keeps going off and on here.
Right. A demon is a point in time. No one is a demon forever. So you know, we've seen like somebody in unfortunate circumstances can become angry. You know, they become angry for a short time or a long time. So a demon. He's sort of like an angry jiva, but he has some history, many lives, even pious lives, loving families. He has a unique relationship with the Lord, but he's not a demon forever.
Thank you.
So, okay.
Thank you, that's very nice. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.